Welcome to Share the Best, the podcast of Top Employers Institute. My name is Patrick Randall. I'm the regional manager of DACH and Central Eastern Europe at Top Employers Institute. And in this podcast, I talk to our top employers about their world of work. Today, my guest is Tunde Todt. She is Group HR Director at Met Holding AG. Welcome to our podcast, Tunde.
Thanks, Patrick, for your kind welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really much looking forward to this conversation. I think after we met in Berlin at the last certification celebration, really wanted to have more insights in what your organization makes so special. And we are going to talk about the topic that is scaling HR for global growth and then navigating international expansion while preserving entrepreneurial DNA. I think this is already opening up a lot of questions in the ears of our listeners, and I'm very happy to already confirmed that we are gonna go much deeper into this in a second. But before we go there, I quickly would like to give you the floor to introduce you a bit more. I know that you are a proud mom of two energetic boys, and I think energetic was the one that I felt was, even though it wasn't, but underscored. So there's a lot of action going on, a lot of energy. So not just in your business environment, but also at home, that plays a big role. But you have an international experience in HR in the background, 50 M&A projects that you led at different stages over the past year. So, Tunde, maybe you want to give us a bit more background on who we are talking to and how you found your way to our podcast today.
Yes, so with a pleasure. So I'm Tunde, and I originally come from Hungary, but I do have quite an international background. Already during my studies, I studied in Germany at the University of Cologne. I have two master's degrees, one from the Corvinus University of Budapest, but another one from CEMS, which is a global management master's program. And my first HR role was also abroad at Henkel in Düsseldorf in their global HQ. And after my internship, I spent over 10 years with British American Tobacco in a few countries. Started in Hungary, but then I was seconded to the UK, then to Serbia, and then to Switzerland. And I'm based here in Switzerland since 12 years. This is where I met with Matt, and I joined Matt and the energy industry almost 9 years ago as Group HR Director, and I'm responsible with my team for everything in HR and beyond, also for the big growth that the company is going through since it ever was founded. So I'm very actively involved in M&A transactions, in new market entries as well, on top of setting up HR systems, processes, and dealing with the day-to-day. And my two energetic boys, whom I'm very proud of, they were already born here. I'm a mom of a 6 and a 3-year-old beautiful son.
I think we aligned on this topic also in a previous call. You know, my daughters are 5 and 2, and I think so. I can and I know there's always a difference to see kind of boys and girls kind of from an energy level, but I absolutely I can relate. With kind of the energy going through the house. And recently I tried to focus on just appreciating that whenever possible, because obviously it is quite a short and sweet time that we are living in as young parents. So, but still happy and see you, even though it is November, no big influx of viruses from the kindergarten at the moment. So happy to see you healthy in front of me. You already mentioned that you joined Met and the energy sector a few years ago. And obviously, as we are going to discuss that transition that Met has made, like putting that next to your own kind of history with them, maybe we can start with just very overall sharing a bit more what Met is and then diving into how it looked like when you started. Because I think like having this common starting point would be very, very good to have for everyone who's listening.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So Met is one of Europe's fastest growing integrated energy company, a privately owned one, which makes us unique. So it's owned 90% by the management and 10% by Keppel Infrastructure from Singapore. The company is doing gas, power, LNG trading, wholesale and sales activities, and also produce energy through gas-fired power plants in more countries, and also via renewable assets, mainly through solar and onshore wind parks. And lately, we started to invest also into battery energy storage technologies, and we are pretty fastly growing. Like when I joined, we were present in 8 countries with 400 employees in 2017. And today we have offices in 21 countries in Europe and beyond. 2 years ago, we established a Singaporean office as well. And we have 1,400 employees from 60 different nationalities. And yeah, and we are aiming for a further big growth as well also in the future.
I can imagine. And if you remember those days that you joined and you said 7 countries, and I think for many of us listening, that's already quite an international span that you have already kind of with the challenge of integrating cultures and different situations across those regions. What was the starting point? Why were you hired? What was your strategy when you started?
That was the time when an international HR function was established here in Switzerland in the global headquarters. And the reason why I was hired, because our group CEO really wanted to build up an international top management team. And that was one of my first goals, to recruit this international top management team. And also to build up HR processes and systems that are scalable for this international growth. Plus, they were looking for someone who already had M&A experience and relatively strong in financial and numerical skills, so, and fitting to the Met culture. So these were the key criteria.
And they were successful. I mean, if you think about it, it was 2017, now it's 2020. I would even dare to say 6. I think we are all with our heads already in the next year. That sounds good. If you describe, maybe just for us to understand, like your first weeks, month, if you think back, what was the culture that you learned about before, but that you then actually experienced? How did that feel?
So one key reason why I joined, because I really found the people great with whom I met during the selection process. And this was confirmed also when I was inside the company. It was in a from startup to medium size of type of company feeling with a lack of processes and systems in many areas, and a bit chaotic because of the unstructured environment. So in the very beginning, I mean, we had to start even to fix some basic things like that the payroll goes on time and accurately. So as a starting point, but it was also a time when we were in a bigger M&A transaction in Romania, where we bought 2 companies almost right after each other. One was the former subsidiary of Swiss company Repower. And a few months later, we bought RWE's Romanian subsidiary. And that was also quite a big task to integrate these 2 companies with the existing Met Romania team at that time.
Yeah, I can imagine, because that's always the thing coming in with M&A. And I was intrigued because you mentioned in the conversations before that you have that experience. And then obviously in my head, that connects to HR. And also kind of experience, you know, how do we match and make different company cultures work? And you have that always with M&A and with outsourcing or what do we call that? Like a part of the organization going out as an independent new brand, building that new culture. But what you do is you talk about RWE, which of course has kind of quite a tradition and a big, most likely own culture and understanding of who we are. When you think about those days and integrating those, how did you make that happen from a cultural perspective? What was the process back there?
Transparent communication is very important. So to communicate it from the moment it is possible and be honest with the employees, then to announce quickly management team structures, give clarity on as many areas as possible. We believe a lot in personal events and personal connections. So also during M&A transactions that are going through, we do this. So like a welcome to Met event, a Christmas party. We have once a year an annual group team building event to which we invite all employees across the globe. And then the newly joining companies get a special slot and a special welcome, and we also invite them, and then they see that they are really part of a bigger company and can connect quickly with other Met employees and the Met culture. And they hear directly strategic and business updates from our group CEO. We celebrate the top performing employees, and then we do a big team building event. So this is also a very important part of the cultural integration.
Yeah, I can, because I completely copy that. If I think about the moments that made me myself most close to our core, to our culture, to who we are, then those are the meetings that we have cross country, even globally. If we have, and I always try to translate that to who might be possibly listening, and that's obviously from kind of small HR organizations where you are HR manager and basically on your own, maybe with another person responsible for payroll, until kind of group CHROs, which we obviously also hope listening, and everything in between. If you think about the business case there from your experience, because obviously those events that you just share are amazing, but also very highly high cost for HR to be budgeted. Was there ever a discussion about this, or was it kind of always crystal clear that this is key for us to be successful when we grow that quickly?
Luckily, this big event need is not coming from HR, but from the business managers, which is very good. So we haven't yet had discussion on whether we need group team building, because everybody believes that we need it to have a very strong culture, and that's like the opportunity for everybody to connect. Also, if we look at our size, that we are in 21 countries with a relatively complex business operations, the total number of employees, the 1,400, it's still not that big compared to the size and complexity they manage, because we try to attract the top talents from each country, and we want to motivate them and foster this common cultural values. And because of this, that group team building event is very important for us.
Yeah, and it's interesting, this whole discussion, obviously, that, and I feel myself even asking the question, like, how is HR paying for it? Do you say, yeah, it's not HR, it's business. And I mean, and that's the thing, right? It should be like that. It's not people and business, but it is, you know, such a unique part. And you mentioned it. It's such a kind of a core to your success to have those key talents and the best in every market, that it is absolutely a business imperative and not an HR show. So absolutely, thanks for that, for putting that in the right perspective. If we then fast forward and look from that phase to today, how do you see the organization change? And maybe also kind of along the way, how did HR respond to that, to continue to enable that growth?
So we have a lot more businesses today, more countries, but also more type of different businesses. We organized them in 2019 to divisions, and last year to business segments. And in HR, I always follow the business structure. So when we moved to the divisional structure, then divisional HR manager roles were created, who are directly reporting to the business head. For me, it's very important that they are close to the business and understand the business need. And now we are looking into creating the segment level structure. We have a centralized HR team, my direct team, with whom we run the central systems and processes and support M&A transactions as well. But we also serve as a knowledge hub, like a center of expertise, through which we try to support all the markets, all the subsidiaries. The divisional HR managers are obviously managing all the day-to-day HR activities related to their business division. And in those countries where we have a sizable number of employees, which is typically around 50-60 employees, there we have a local HR person who manages the local market related HR activities.
So if we stay there, and you already mentioned we there's a certain moment where you see the need for local HR, but you also have a strong central team. How do you make sure kind of decisions are balanced, decisions are taken where people are close to the business, but also taking into consideration that you are this one organization where you want to kind of have a common understanding of how things are done. Can you reflect a bit on that decision that you most likely are doing regularly again and again, but how would you describe that process within Met Group?
So our decision-making backbone is what we call like the list of decision-making authorities, LDA. We have a document where there is an HR section, but not only. So also all the business decisions or governance-related decisions are listed there, that who is making decision in what matter. And that's kind of driving the decision-making. When it comes to HR, I always had a bit the business mind as well when I was setting up systems and processes, that what can be the most efficient way of running the function and how we can best support the business. When it comes to systems, I still think that the best is like to have a common HR system, because that's the most cost efficient. So the cost per user is typically lower if you have one system and more users. You can easily standardize processes, but even make the local subs' life easier, because they already have a system. They don't have to go and tender it. And from the headquarters point of view, it's a good control tool as well, because you see all the data that are relevant for you.
What are typical things that you then leave for local? Because I completely echo what you say on, we have to also just very simply work in the same way, kind of to be comparable, to be talking the same language. But what are those things that you, maybe from a cultural country perspective, but also from an kind of M&A result perspective, maybe even what you leave to local, maybe not even decision-making, but locally filling it in according to what's needed on the ground?
It's a little bit depends on the subsidiary. So if it's a sales and trading related subsidiary, then typically benefits, payroll, all the administration are local. Also in the recruitment field, we have guidelines and we can also offer support, but it's up to them to decide how they use these tools. On the asset side, where we have blue color workers and plants, it's obviously it's very different. There we are mainly in touch with the management and they are kind of fully getting all the updates of Met, but there definitely they have their own culture within the power plant with trade unions, work councils, and there it's up to them to manage them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I understand. Yeah. And that's, I think that's also where the complexity of your business model comes in. And I think something that has been also changing over the past, it's not yet 10 years, but like since 2017 and all the mergers that you are mentioning, has that added, and maybe that's very, maybe a stupid question, but has that added complexity to your role? And if so, what?
Definitely. I think one complexity is that the business is changing fast. Like, just to give you an example, now that the natural gas pipelines are cut in some parts, we had to move, and not only we, but Europe, to LNG and to alternative supply routes. So very fastly, we had to scale up the LNG team. And as last year, we were traded 22 cargoes. This year, it looks like it will be 80. So just the pace of the growth. And then, of course, you need new capabilities. You need to bring in expertise. So this is one area, or renewables, where we have a strong pipeline of building up renewable assets and then operating them. That also needed a fast scaling up, but also recruitment, because we need the expertise from the market. So that's changing. Or if we do a new market entry, like when we opened the Singapore office, then very quickly we had to recruit that new Asian team together.
It's a nice connect to what we wanted to talk about next, is talent strategy, because I can imagine that that is one, and you mentioned it, one of the added complexities in a growing environment. Can you share a bit on how you do that? And feel free to kind of talk about more kind of overall principles, but also take Singapore as an example or another country, just for everyone who's listening to understand how you're doing that in that pace and following the business needs there.
So if we do a new market entry, then typically first we appoint the CEO, and then together with the CEO, we put together a business plan and support him in everything, like to set up the business from scratch with the customer acquisition, but in HR, in setting up the payroll, recruiting the team together. The CEOs in a given country, we like to be local. So from that local market, this year we established the for example, the Met Czech Republic office, where we appointed a Czech colleague who started 10 years ago as an intern with us, then went through our talent development program, did a secondment in Germany and Turkey, and it was his idea to establish Met Czech, brought a business plan proposal, which was approved by the board, and then we sent him to the Czech Republic to as a CEO to build up that business. So this is like one way. On the junior side, because we do believe in the power of the young talents, we cooperate with the best universities in Europe and beyond. We are a global corporate partner of CEMS, which is the community of European management schools. And now they also have globally the best economy universities from 33 countries, part of this program. And in this program, typically from the best economy university, the top 30 students can participate. And it proved to be a very successful partnership for us. We recruit a lot from this program, and we work with these universities in several initiatives. Even on a management board level, 1/3 of our board members are former CEMS graduates, and we have many also in intern levels and across the whole organization. So we work with these universities, and where we have bigger offices, like in Switzerland, it's University of St. Gallen and ETH Zurich, with whom we work the most, and they also have programs, graduates, which are fitting our needs.
Yeah, so it is kind of a combination of you bringing in new people locally, but also ideally starting off with someone who knows you very well, comes from within. Okay. So that's like the same, for example, if you would look at Singapore, as you mentioned earlier, that kind of, especially the hiring of local talent was key priority there. So then the CEO would also be someone from within that that started off the business.
Yes. So in the Singapore office, we have a secondee from Met, and then as a CEO, and then the other team members are all local. But we also have markets where, like, it's an external recruit, an externally experienced energy industry professional.
Yeah, and is that the same way you're approaching things today than you have done, for example, in 2018 or 19? Or are there things where you say, looking back, okay, this is where we improved, this is where we learned from opening new or acquiring new organizations, and that's why we do it differently now? Are there those nuggets of sharing or of knowledge that you can share?
Yes. I mean, I think one big difference, we improved in many areas, and of course we constantly learn that we are much more digital than we were. So that's, I think, one difference. We also have a lot more knowledge. So now it can be faster to do a new market entry because we have a lot of knowledge on how to do it, a lot of materials to share.
Okay. Yeah, I can follow. So there's obviously the more often you do it, the better you get. One thing that was something that we also talked about, and it's a topic in our survey at this point this year especially, where we saw that there's a lot of appetite for understanding how to do that better. And you mentioned the alumni club in the preparation. Obviously, that is highly connected to how you do offboarding. So how do you make sure that people who have the intention to leave kind of you're staying in touch because they're gathering knowledge somewhere else, and you might wanna get them back on board with even more experience than they had when they left. Can you share a bit on how this alumni club works and why this has been implemented the way it has been?
I mean, we always say that Met, like how we were built up from zero revenue in 18 years to a company of 18 billion euro revenue last year, was because of the people. Because in the beginning, we didn't really have anything else, just our employees. And because it's still not a huge number of employees, everybody actually made a difference who was an employee and had really an impact. And we appreciate that and consider them as kind of like a family member, even if we departed. This is also part of life, that sometimes even all of us on one day will go to retirement, so which is also a way to depart, but that this is part of life, that sometimes you depart. But we still want to keep in touch with them. That was the reason why this alumni club was created, because this can still foster networks, this can foster businesses. With some alumni, we work together through consultancy projects, or they are bringing in even investment proposals. And many we rehire. So every 50th employee, 2% of our workforce, is an alumni, a boomerang, who went away from Met, but then returned. That's also an aim of the program. They are also our ambassadors, so it's really good also for our brand. And we just also, we like events, so we also like to meet with the alumni and to have a fun night together and to utilize the networking of them.
If there's one thing that you're doing within this alumni network that someone who is not doing it yet should start with, what would it be? A simple thing to do when you have people leaving and you want to stay connected?
I think to keep the good relationship. I think just the fact that due to any reason there is a departure with that person, this doesn't mean that the relationship should be destroyed. So we really think, me as well, that this good relationship should be kept no matter like. So if it's not a termination for cause type of situation, then this person still contributed and it's a valuable person, and to value that person also after departure.
Yeah. Thank you. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that there's it's also kind of related, you could say, to our baseline as kind of what we say is a top employer, right? Because what we, and you know that in detail, what we are checking is not kind of the individual kind of engagement or perception of an employer brand that for every employee at any point in time. What we measure is how you are putting practices in place to be a good employer for everyone. And that good employment chip can also mean difficult decisions and decisions that might not be kind of the best decision for everyone in at every time, but still it's for the greater good of a company growing and moving forward. So an employee that might be affected by, and you are growing now, but sometimes it's about right sizing and about restructuring, yeah, should be kind of still valued and kind of stayed in contact with in a good way, so that when times turn and new opportunities arise, new skills are acquired, people do think back and want to go back if possible. As a last bullet point on our agenda, I would like to focus a bit on the employer branding side of things, because obviously with a growing organization like that, growing need for talent, there's also a growing need for people to know who you are and what you stand for. How did that develop over those years that you have been with Met?
We have now an employer branding strategy in place, which is following, again, like the business strategy. So our motto is bringing new energy to Europe. And based on this, we created the Bring Your Energy as an EVP. And under that, working together with our marketing team, communications team, and the HR team, we kind of developed a few legs. So one is obviously social media presence, what topics we would like to feature. Then another one is also how we work with the universities together, because the young talents, it's a very important focus group for us. And then a third main leg is the energy industry professionals, where it goes like also hand in hand with the businesses on how we appear there, how we are seen. And the top employer certification is also an important part of it. It was an aim to get there, and we are very happy that we managed to get there and further raise the bar in all of our people practices.
It's interesting because you mentioned also the energy industry again, and I like what comes back throughout the conversation is that connection to the business and that kind of being really that enabler of the business priorities. And I think when you mention kind of employer branding in the energy industry, I think those are the initiatives where really your people are, and you mentioned ambassadors before when it comes to the alumni network, but where they really can be the ambassador and really sharing what bring your energy really means for everyone. So I think that's a very, very good point to make. Looking at the time, what I would like to kind of conclude the content side of this conversation, and then we're going to go in a bit of a fun section at the end. If you reflect maybe on your personal journey that you have gone through, what are the key things that you learned, maybe also about yourself, but also about the challenge that you faced now looking back to, what is it now, 9 years, 8 years, 9 years at Met Group?
Maybe that the impossible is possible, because the unique thing at Met is that because we are privately owned, or like the management is owning the company, the majority, there is no one else to think through what you need and what you should implement. So it's really, it's on you. And you should trust in yourself that you can really make the best decision. And it's very good to see when we put something in practice and then this is working. And it's also reflecting in the whole growth of the company. So the business growth, the size we reached in this very few years, it's tremendous. And we think that we reached it in a sustainable way so that this will stay and this will actually further grow. And when you are in your day-to-day job, you just don't even have time to think about it. But when you stop for a minute and you check what we reached, it's a really great achievement, and it's very good to be part of it. And this was really us, so there was no one else to tell us what to do and how to do.
And we are at the end of the year, right? So it's always not just in kind of HR life cycle, something where the end of year conversations are taking place, but also when you look at the year, those of us who are celebrating Christmas, it's kind of the time to come back, to look back at last year. If we just look at this last year and you imagine yourself sitting under the Christmas tree, if you have one, I think the energetic boys will definitely demand one. If you are there and think about this year, what is the thing that you are proud of within your role?
I mean, one is definitely that we managed to come to this top employer club, because it took us eight years to reach this level, because this means that we improved in many, many areas, and now we really reach a high international benchmark. And I'm more always forward-looking, so the company is at a stage where what we say like a chapter 3 will start a new beginning, because we will have a new group CEO, first time in the history of the company. So I'm already in the mind that how to make this as a success, so that we go through successfully on this very big leadership change that is ahead of us.
And we have one thing in common, because we also have the new CEO at Top Employers Institute, but also a familiar face, our CCO moving up, and David Plink after, I think, 15 years. So I understand the feeling of it has always been Top Employers is David Plink, and now it is changing. So I think we have a kind of maybe a similar look at 2026. Thank you a lot, Tunde, for all of the inspirational insights and that look into the fast-paced world that you have been living in over the last 9 years, and the sharings that you have brought with you, the learnings as well. So I think I don't say too much there. If someone wants to dig a bit deeper or has a specific question, they're finding themselves in a impossible situation with an M&A, that they can drop you a LinkedIn message and say, okay, you said impossible is possible. Let me come back to that. I have a question for you. I hope that is always an option. We do always end our episodes with a quick and fun, quick answers to quick questions section. So there are a few questions that I would like to ask you, and feel free to just shout out whatever is coming to your mind first. So Tunde, the first one is, what is motivating you to be your best at work every day?
Constant drive to improve things and implement things. So there is always room to improve. There are always challenging goals, and this is what motivates me.
And having two kids, we talked about that. What do you wish they will not be hearing about anymore, because it's long gone by then, when they enter into the workplace? What's this one thing that you're just tired about hearing and you don't wish for them to still hear?
Maybe one more thing that less, or even more important, less geopolitical tensions. Because currently there are a lot, and I really wish for my kids that they won't have when they become adult.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's work on that wherever we can. And last question, 50 M&A projects you mentioned, you have managed through your professional career. What is the one mistake that you see happening again and again and again that you just don't want to happen?
Maybe to go still deeper in the risk that such a transaction can bring as well. So it can bring opportunity, but there are always surprises as well. So to do a deeper dive on that and on understanding why the seller is actually selling.
Okay, thank you. And then I do have one last. Why is Med Group your personal top employer?
Because of the people and the growth, and because of the freedom you have here, and a lot of out of the box thinking that you can come up with, because we really don't limit these innovative ideas, and you have a very big freedom in coming up with ideas and implementing them.
Thank you. I think we all hear that in everything you shared today. So thank you for summing that up. Tunde, again, thank you for your openness. As always, at the end of this episode, you have a last word that you can share with the followership, I wanted to say, so with the people listening to your episode. Is there anything you want to kind of give them with their day today?
The trust in yourself, just trust in yourself and follow your own path and believe in that you can really make that happen.
Thank you. Thanks, Tunde. Thanks, everyone, listening to today's episode. I hope you found it equally interesting as I found it in the conversation today with Tunde Todd, Group HR Director, I have to say, of Med Group. Thanks again, Tunde, and everyone who's listening. Have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.